First, before the public learned about a major reorganization of the state's UW system, it was described as an open secret at the state capitol. Rich Kramer reports that the plan to restructure the UW's two-year colleges and extension programs was launched without input from the public, staff, or students.
On October 10th, the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel reported on a plan to merge the university system's two- and four-year campuses and move programs from UW Extension to other parts of the system. System President Ray Cross said it was in response to declining enrollment and changing state demographics. The leaked proposal was a surprise for employees and students. Even UW Colleges and Extension Chancellor Kathy Sandine said she'd first seen details the day before. But during a visit to the state capitol before the story broke, UW-Madison Chancellor Rebecca Blank told President Cross that his plan was an open secret there. In emails obtained by WPR, she said four lawmakers asked her about it, including one who had obviously spoken to Cross. Blank declined to be interviewed for this story.
It was less than 2 weeks before it was made public that I got a call from Ray Cross.
That's Republican State Representative Dave Murphy, who chairs the Assembly's Committee on Colleges and Universities.
For me personally, I think he knew that it would be something that I could go along with it, and it's probably based on the discussions that we had had earlier.
In 2015, Murphy called for eliminating or reforming UW Colleges and Extension, but he says he didn't ask Cross to do it. As committee chair, he says Cross's call was a courtesy, and there was reason to limit how many people knew about the plan.
You know, if you open this up, it could end up just being a free-for-all. As far as trying to bring student and faculty and everything together to discuss this, you'd never get it done.
In an email to a member of the Board of Regents, Cross expressed similar frustrations. He said if shared governance had been involved, quote, we wouldn't be doing anything. UW La Crosse Emeritus Professor Joe Heim says the approach was unusual, but being responsive to lawmakers isn't surprising.
They do have an enormous influence over the university budget, and a person would be a fool not to pay attention to the people who control the gold, shall we say.
On October 11th, Crosse sent an email asking how the news was going over at the Capitol. The UW's representative there said Republican lawmakers were taking the restructure and other policy changes backed by their caucus as a sign the university was, quote, being aggressive and forward-thinking. But that wasn't the reaction from many UW faculty, staff, and students. Holly Hassel chairs the Faculty Senate at UW Colleges. She says slowing the process down wouldn't have been a bad thing. Hassel says faculty expertise could have helped avoid potential problems that have come to light since the plan's release.
It doesn't mean it wouldn't get solved or it wouldn't get addressed, right? And I think the faculty, staff, and students who've been involved in shared governance would have welcomed the opportunity to be presented with a plan, a proposal, right? Like, here are some issues.
Groups with expertise on university governance say an inclusive approach is best. That includes Michael Polyakov of the conservative-leaning American Council of Trustees and Alumni.
Public institutions gain public trust through transparency, and they, above all, preeminently should be modeling open discourse, a kind of discourse that is appropriate for a free society.
1 month after its unveiling, the UW Board of Regents approved President Cross's plan, and an advisory steering committee was established. Of its 25 members, there are two faculty, including Professor Hassel, one staff member, and one student. UW spokeswoman Stephanie Marquis says after a rough introduction, all stakeholders are involved in remaking the University of Wisconsin system.
So I think that we would be the first to acknowledge that this wasn't rolled out the way that we planned or the way that we anticipated or would have liked to do. But I think what's really important is that we have to move forward, think about what do we need to do for our students, because that's really what this is about.
And the university will be moving forward by July 1st. That's when the merger of the two- and four-year campuses is slated to be completed, but administrators say portions of the plan will take years to complete. Rich Kramer, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Now, in Wisconsin, we take our cheese-centric dishes very seriously, but for today's Food Friday, we're actually letting a Texan talk to us about cheese. We're going to head into the South for a deep dive into the gooey world of queso, the southwestern chili cheese dip that you might find yourself dipping into this Super Bowl Sunday. Lisa Fain joins us now. She blogs as the Homesick Texan, and her new book is Queso, Regional Recipes for the World's Favorite Chili Cheese Dip. Lisa, welcome to Central Time.
Hi, Rob. I'm actually in Central Time right now myself, so I'm in Texas.
Oh, great. Well, you're back home in Texas, so not homesick today, I guess.
No, I'm not.
Talk about the basics of what is queso. Is there like a solid definition? It's got to have this or it's not queso.
Well, you know, queso is a very many-splendored thing. Like many Texans, and actually Midwesterners as well, I grew up with thinking that queso was essentially Rotel dip, which is a brick of Velveeta cheese melted with a can of tomatoes and green chilies. And this is what I grew up eating, and it's delicious, it's simple, it goes well, it carries well, it's a great potluck dish. But when I was 25, I moved to New York, and in New York, they didn't sell Velveeta or Rotel. And it was actually a Super Bowl weekend, 1996, the last time the Dallas Cowboys were in the Super Bowl, and I was going to have a party, and I wanted to make queso, and I couldn't find these things. And so I had to relearn what queso is and learn other ways to make it, and this kind of began my obsession with chili con queso. But the name is chili con queso, so for me, my basic definition of chili con queso is it has to have cheese, of course, and it has to have chili peppers. So those are the two building blocks of all the different kind of quesos you can have.
Now, here you are. You're writing this book on chili con queso, and you, I understand, really threw yourself into your research. There's no possibility that you could eat too much chili con queso to get to the bottom of things.
No. This is probably the most fun project I've ever had. I spent about 4 months eating queso every day, and a lot of that time, about a month, was spent actually out in the field in Texas and in southern New Mexico, and I went to Arkansas, and I was just driving around eating. I wouldn't eat the full bowl, but I would, you know, probably dip into about 10 quesos every day. And then, you know, I go back to New York and I'm recipe testing. And so for 4 months, I ate queso every day. And I had a few other things, like I'd eat salad or beans to, you know, get some other nutrients in my body. But the funny thing was, at the end, I ended up losing 10 pounds.
I don't know how that works.
I don't either. You know, I went to my doctor and she goes, "You've lost weight." And I was like, "Really?" Because I don't have a scale. And she goes, were you trying to lose weight?" And I told her what I'd been doing. And she goes, "Well, you know, queso's low carb, so I guess there is maybe, yeah, there's an argument for the queso diet."
We'll watch for your sequel, The Queso Diet. Now, you looked not just into the making, we're going to get into some recipes in a bit, but you looked into the history of chili con queso. How far back did you go? What did you find as the early origins?
Well, you know, it was kind of hard to pinpoint. I spent a lot of time at libraries in Texas and actually doing research through the New York Public Library and such. My obsession with the history of queso actually stemmed from, the people of Arkansas were claiming that chili con queso came from Arkansas. And I was like, that can't be right. It's chili con queso. That just doesn't make sense. And so I started doing research, and, I assumed that it probably did come from Mexico, and it did. But what I did was I read a bunch of old cookbooks and newspaper articles and things like that. And I wasn't able to find the exact, you know, point when it was invented. But the earliest recipe that I found citations in poetry and literature from Mexico. But the earliest recipe that was chilies with cheese was in the late 1800s, and it was called Chilies Poblanos. And that was in a Poblano, Mexico cookbook.
And we've got that recipe. You shared it with us. It's at WPR.org/Food Friday. So tell us about this primordial chili con queso recipe, Chilies Poblano.
Well, you know, interestingly enough, in northern Mexico, in the state of Chihuahua and, El Paso, which is right across the border from Juarez, which is a Chihuahuan state, and even southern New Mexico, that area, they have actually their own, what they say, they serve chili con queso there, but it's very different from what you would get in the rest of Texas. You know, traditionally, most people think of queso as a processed cheese dip. But in that part of the world, northern Mexico and El Paso, they serve queso, but it's made with white melting cheese, so like Monterey Jack or Munster or Asadero. And so this recipe I found is very similar to what they're still serving today in that part of the world. And the chilies poblanos, it's just tomatoes. It's poblano chilies, which have been roasted and skinned and cut into strips, and it's milk. And the cheese wasn't specified, but a lot of the recipes in this cookbook called for Gruyere or Asadero, so I made it with either one, and it was delicious. And it's a thick. It's not really a dip. It's kind of hard to explain. It's like queso fundido, where it's just sort of grilled and it's thick and it's a little soupy. And so you can't really put your chips into it because it's a little too thick. But you can, you know, spoon it in tortillas. But it's quite delicious.
That's one of the basics. And then you found that people took queso in a lot of different directions.
Yes, Yes. Well, one of my things that I was trying to figure out in the history is when did it go from being just chili peppers and white cheese to being, you know, this processed cheese dip that you, you know, actually stick chips into. And in the early 1900s, Welsh rarebit was really popular in the United States, and a lot of the recipes that you would find were made with American cheese, and it'd be like American cheese and beer, and you'd, you know, pour it over toast. And then there was a recipe for something called Mexican rarebit, and it was American cheese, tomatoes, chili peppers, and some aromatics and beer. And when I made this recipe, I think it was from the late, like the 19 teens, it tasted so much like queso. So I kind of pinpointed that as one of the turning points for queso to become an American cheese dip.
We are talking about all things queso, cheese dip, chili con queso with our queso expert, Lisa Fain. She's the author of Queso, Regional Recipes for the World's Favorite Chili Cheese Dip. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you make a cheese dip often, or maybe at special occasions like Super Bowl Sunday? Do you have a favorite go-to recipe, a secret you want to share, exactly the right kind of cheese? Is there a Wisconsin cheese that makes the best dip? Or do you have a question for our guest? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post and find a link to a couple of recipes on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. I want to look at another one of those recipes now, Lisa. Felix queso. Tell us about that one.
Well, this is a very unusual chili con queso. It's named after the man who owned the eponymous restaurant. His name was Felix Tijerina. He was a Houstonian. And he opened his restaurant in 1937, and it was, you know, just classic Tex-Mex, which is, you know, cheese enchiladas covered in chili con carne, smothered in cheese and onions. And his queso, however, was very different from other chili con quesos that you would encounter then and even now. It's really thick, and it's kind of hard to describe. I would say paste-like, but that doesn't sound very appetizing. But it's super thick, and it's made with American cheese and tomatoes and chili powder and paprika and some sautéed onions and some tomatoes and garlic. And it's an acquired taste. But once you acquire it, it becomes very addictive. And there's really, I have never discovered any other chili con queso like it. In my research, I was trying to figure out where this came from, and I actually really have no idea, nor does anyone else. But it's very delicious.
In your description, the picture looks great. You use the phrase oozing with red grease. And seeing the picture, that actually looks good. The phrase doesn't make it sound good, but it looks really good.
Yeah, it goes either way. People either love the grease or they don't love the grease. But, yeah, I think it's actually very delectable.
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Denise is with us from the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. Denise, hi.
Hi, can you hear me?
We sure can. What did you want to tell us about?
Hi, I'm actually lived in Texas, and whenever I make pita and the leaves, but I always added the Jimmy Dean sage sausage to it, and it is delicious.
Oh, you
That's
had
an excellent addition. I love that.
Thank you so much for sharing that, Denise. And do we see people adding sausage or other meats to chili con queso very often?
Oh, yes. That's very, very common. Breakfast sausage, you know, sage-based breakfast sausage, Mexican chorizo made with chili peppers, fajita meat, brisket, smoked brisket, anything goes when it comes to adding meat to chili con queso.
Denise, thanks a lot for that call. And Lisa, you've got the dips themselves and a lot of different variations, but you also have recipes that use some of these dips, huevos rancheros, El Paso style. Tell us a little bit about that one.
Yeah, that's unusual because typically when you order huevos rancheros, the ranchero refers to a ranchero salsa, which is a tomato-based salsa with tomatoes and green chilies and, you know, onions and garlic. But in El Paso, when you order huevos rancheros, it comes with an American cheese-based sauce with tomatoes and chili peppers. It's essentially queso. And, you see this in all the restaurants in El Paso, and it's a double confounding thing, because first of all, the queso that you usually get there, like I said earlier, is made with white cheese, not processed cheese, but they put processed cheese on their eggs, and they call it ranchero, even though it's not a ranchero salsa. I really don't know where this came from, and nobody does either. I asked a lot of people, and they're like, nope, we've just always done it this way, but it's so good.
Let's go back to our callers now. Jim is on the line in McGregor, Iowa. Jim, hi.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. My wife and I have been trying to come up with the right cheese for the type of queso that we've really enjoyed from Mexican restaurants. And it's used, it melts, it's not thick at all. It's it melts really well, and we've asked various sources about it. A lot of times they've suggested Monterey Jack, and that is certainly good, but it's awfully thick, and we've tried adding cream to it, and it doesn't seem to be quite the same. So this cheese that we're thinking of is just a delightful combination of flavor and consistency. It's just a really delicious mixed with chorizo or peppers. And so I wondered if you might have a suggestion for the type of cheese that
Gotcha, Jim. Lisa, any suggestions? What kind of cheese should Jim experiment with?
I would suggest, what I gather, most restaurants use something called velvet melt or easy melt, and you can't buy that. That's made by Land O'Lakes, and it's not available to consumers. It's a restaurant-only product.
Uh-huh.
But and it's magical. But to approximate that flavor, what I would do is I would do white American cheese, and I would get the kind from the deli. You can ask, you know, the deli for, you know, a pound or a half a pound of white American cheese. And then I would make a sauce with either dairy or beer or broth and thicken it with cornstarch. And I'd also add some onions and some garlics and your chili peppers. And then I'd probably do half American cheese and melt that into the broth. And then I'd add half Monterey Jack, so equal ratios. And so you get the tang of the Monterey Jack, but the white processed cheese will smooth it out and make it thin and make it dippable.
All right, hope that helps. Let's go now to Sandy with us in Williams Bay. Sandy, hi.
Hi there, how are you?
Good. What do you want to tell us about, Sandy?
I spent a long time in Austin, Texas when I was in grad school, and there was this restaurant way down South Austin, like on Manchac. I think it was called the Texan, and they had a queso flameado, which was amazing. It was white cheese, and they would light it on fire. And I don't know if it's traditional, but it's the best queso I've ever had.
Wow.
Yeah, that's actually very traditional.
A flaming queso is traditional, Lisa. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I when I was in college, I worked in a Mexican restaurant, and that was one of my jobs. And you pour Everclear over it, and then you take it to the table and you light it. It's very dramatic.
Wow. Now, you've got an Austin diner-style queso here. Just skimming through the recipe, I'm not blowing it up at any point, though. I don't think, right?
No. That's a very classic queso, but there is queso flameado in the book that suggests it tells you about the fire. But my publisher actually said that I couldn't really talk about it because I might get sued, so I don't really give you descriptions on how to set the queso on fire.
All right. Don't try this on at home, kids. We don't want to ruin anyone's Super Bowl Sunday. So you've tried all of these quesos from around the region, Lisa. If there's a stereotype of people from Texas, and I hate to contribute to it, but I would assume that people from Texas think that the Texas thing is the best one. So are you gonna make the case that Texas, even though other people do it, Texas does it best?
Yes, of course. I'm a seventh generation Texan, and I am a loyalist. So Texas queso is the best.
And for people who are thinking, okay, I'm going to do this on Super Bowl Sunday, I'm going to get the tortilla chips, give us the one or two that you'd recommend going for the big game.
In my book, I would do the Austin-style diner queso, which is just this classic queso, and you approximate that flavor, that restaurant flavor, that Velveeta doesn't quite have. If you use the American cheese with the cornstarch-based sauce, it's smooth, and it's like one extra step. but it's creamier because American cheese has more dairy in it than Velveeta does. So that's one of my favorites. And then, but again, there is absolutely nothing wrong with Velveeta. And if you're going to go old school, you know, the brick of Velveeta with a can of Rotel and then putting things in it like chili or sausage like Denise does or chorizo, you know, and then you can even liven it up with Monterey Jack and cheddar and pepper jack and cilantro and salsa. You know, that when you start with the real simple basic of the Velveeta and the Rotel, you know, it's this palette that you can add anything to.
And if we add a little maybe extra sharp Wisconsin cheddar in there, that's not going to hurt anything,
oh,
right?
Oh, no, that would be so delicious.
Lisa, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been a lot of fun.
Thank you.
We've been talking to Lisa Fain. She blogs as the Homesick Texan, and she's the author of the book we've been talking about. It's Queso, Regional Recipes for the World's Favorite Chili Cheese Dip. We've been learning all about queso. I avoided our producer Carl's puns. I took them on a queso-by-queso basis. There, Carl, I got one in for you. You could find a couple of the recipes we've talked about, these queso recipes. They're over at the Ideas Network Facebook page, or you can go right to WPR.org/Food Friday. And if you're making one of these dips for the big game on Sunday, think about your pals at Central Time and drop some off. Oh, no. Wait, that's going to be too late. Take a picture of them, though, and upload it over at the Ideas Network Facebook page or tweet us at Central Time WPR.